All right. Do you guys know what the difference is between a mistake and a huge mistake? All right. This guy made a mistake. Getting into jail, that's not good. He's about to make a huge mistake that is going to affect the rest of his life, however short it may be, and nasty. This is making a mistake. Making a mistake as a minister is saying the wrong bride's name while you're conducting a wedding. That's a mistake. Making a huge mistake is if you're the groom and you say the wrong bride's name at a wedding. There's a category difference. Making a mistake is backing up your car and running over your dog. That's a mistake. Making a huge mistake is backing up your car and missing your cat. There's this category. Do I have more dog people or cat people in the room, or am I going to get lynched afterwards? We're going to see. So you guys got the concept, right? There's mistakes, and then there's huge mistakes. I own this fascinating little book called The Expert Speak, The Definitive Compendium of Authoritative Misinformation. It's just comprised of all the stuff that experts have said with confidence over the years that has proven to be glaringly wrong. I was just skimming it this morning, just thinking about tonight. And there were a couple of just leaped out at me, things that I really was shocked to discover experts had said. For example, they couldn't hit an elephant this deep. The last words of General John B. Sedgwick, Civil War officer, Battle of Spotsylvania, 1864. That one's pretty well known, but there's some that are not quite as well known that really are striking in their absurdity. For example, did you know Zambia has a NASA equivalent? Zambia. Edward Mukaka Nkloso, the Director General of the Zambia NASA equivalent, November 3rd, 1964. I'll have my first Zambian astronaut on the moon by 1965. We're using my own firing system derived from the catapult. I'm getting my astronauts acclimated to space travel by placing them in a space capsule every day. It's a 40-gallon oil drum in which they sit, and then I roll them down a hill. This gives them the feeling of rushing through space. I also make them swing from the end of a long rope. When they reach the highest point, I cut the rope. This produces the feeling of freeze fall. To my knowledge, Zambia is still waiting to place their first person in orbit. 283. I do not consider Hitler to be as bad as he is depicted. He's showing an ability that is amazing, and he seems to be gaining his victories without much bloodshed. Gandhi. There's mistakes, and then there's huge mistakes. My dynamite will sooner lead to peace than 1,000 world conventions. As soon as men will find that in one instant whole armies can be utterly destroyed, they surely will abide by a golden peace. Alfred Nobel, inventor of dynamite, founder of the Nobel Prizes, including the Nobel Peace Prize. Later in his life, he realized he had been horribly wrong. Ironic, isn't it? Now we go to war because of suspicion of weapons of mass destruction. Back then, he thought the invention of weapons of mass destruction would be the thing that saved humanity from itself. Turn with me in the Bible if you happen to have one. If not, the lyrics. By the way, speaking of mistakes, mistake. Having a background video that blinds you. Huge mistake. Letting it run to the end. Thank God I didn't make a big one. Wow, that was amazing. I had my eyes closed. I could still see the pulsing lights. Whew. Okay. Turn to Matthew chapter 27, starting in verse 1. Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people came to the decision to put Jesus to death. They bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. When Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 silver coins to the chief priests and the elders. "I have sinned," he said, "for I have betrayed innocent blood." That's a mistake. Fairly significant mistake. "What is that to us?" they replied. "That's your responsibility." So Judas threw the money into the temple and left. Then he went away and hanged himself. Now that was a huge mistake. He had made a mistake, and then he made the worst mistake and the last mistake of his life. I'd like to contrast that tonight with the story of Peter. John 21, starting in verse 15. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you." The setting for this, by the way, of course, Peter, in the same night that Jesus was betrayed by Judas, denied that he knew Jesus three times. Jesus appears to him on a beach. "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Fascinating phrase there. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter had rejected Jesus, but Jesus would not reject him. Peter and Judas, studying contrast. Judas had betrayed innocent blood. Peter had denied Jesus three times. He had abandoned his best friend in his hour of greatest need. He had denied he'd even met the man. They had a lot in common. When Judas realized what he had done, actually, when Judas realized the consequences of what he had done, it says he was seized with remorse. It says also that when Peter realized what he had done, he wept bitterly. He cried huge tears because of the sorrow that overwhelmed his heart. There were a lot alike, and they had a huge decision to make. They each were aware that they had made a major, possibly life-altering mistake. Well, definitely life-altering. What changed was the way that they each responded to the mistake that they had made. Let's start with Judas and look at Peter. First, Judas wasn't really sorry about what he had done. He was sorry about the outcome of what he had done. That's a significant difference, and I think it's worth meditating on for a second. As a result of that, for whatever reason, Judas never really was able to come to the point of repentance for the act itself. Instead, what he chose to do was to punish himself. He chose to bludgeon himself internally and then finally kill himself externally because of the guilt that was consuming him from the inside out. Have you ever lied awake in bed at night and just thought about the stupid mistakes you made? Maybe that day, maybe 10 years ago. It's amazing how things will just flash back to you. Like you'll think you're completely beyond something like, "Oh my God, prom." Oh wait, that's not too long ago for some of you guys. "Oh my God, the grade school playground," you know, or whatever. You just have this flashback. And you have a choice in that moment. You can either dwell in that and just flagellate yourself, or you can move beyond it. On those times when we sit there and we dwell in our shame, in our guilt, and our sorrow, we have a lot in common with Judas. Because that's exactly what he was doing. He was punishing himself for what he perceived to be the sins that he had committed. Let's contrast that with Peter. Judas betrayed Peter once. Judas betrayed Jesus once. Peter denied Jesus three times. Now, to be fair, Peter's first sin was spontaneous. And he wasn't actually the one who turned Jesus over to death. But here's the thing. If my wife came to me and said, "Glenn, I have a confession to make. I was kissed by another man today," I would be offended. That's my wife, for those of you who don't know me. Well, honey, I'm shocked. How could this happen? Well, the thing is, we were talking, and he just reached over and he smacked me on the lips. Okay, well, you know, it doesn't sound like you had a lot of control over it. That's good. Now, if she says, "Glenn, I have a confession to make. A man kissed me three times today." That's different. The first time, maybe is a mistake. Beyond that, we're starting to see a pattern of behavior. So I don't want to minimize what Peter did here when he denied Jesus three times. And if you look at the text, in ascending orders of ferocity and of seriousness in the eyes of the Jewish culture at the time, and finally, cursing. And that doesn't mean he like was like, "No, I don't know the beep." It means he was calling down curses on himself if he was lying before God that he did not know the man. So it's a big deal. So Peter denies Jesus three times. And then he sees with sorrow as soon as he has done it, before he even knows how the story turns out. Already different from Judas. He's tenderhearted. Runs away and sobs. However, his response isn't completely healthy either. I mean, he doesn't choose to undo what he's done. And there's ways he could have done that, to take a bold stand with Jesus that night, right? Like, he doesn't choose to go back and stand at the foot of the cross like John did. No. He doesn't choose to help bury Jesus like Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea did. Nope. Peter's gone. He's out of commission for a while, for a couple of days. Then finally shows back up. He is one of the first people to see the resurrection. To see the evidence of the resurrection, meaning the empty tomb. And he shows up, hangs out with the disciples, sees Jesus two times. And then he does something fascinating. It's baffling, actually, in some ways. He goes fishing. Read with me the book of John, chapter 21, starting in verse 3. Simon Peter said to the others, "I am going fishing." "We will come with you," they told him. So they went out in a boat, But all that night they did not catch a thing. As the sun was rising, Jesus stood at the water's edge, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Then he asked them, "Young men, haven't you caught anything?" "Not a thing," they answered. He said to them, "Throw your net out on the right side of the boat, and you will catch some." So they threw the net out and could not pull it back in because they had caught so many fish. It's fascinating to me. I mean, if he had said, "Let's go fishing," and meant like go recreational fishing, that would be like one thing. I can maybe frame my mind around that. It's like, this is just too much stress. I'm freaking out. Let's just do something that's mindless, thoughtless, also well away from Roman soldiers. This is not that. He went with his friends, who were also professional fishermen, and fished all night long. What's he doing? Well, he's leaving his life as a follower of Jesus, as a sort of vocational follower of Jesus. I mean, I'm sure he's still got respect for the guy, but he's going back to what he was doing before he met Jesus. Now, he knows Jesus is risen from the dead, but I imagine this is probably the sort of thing that's running through his mind. Ladies, pretend you're on a date with a big, strapping gentleman like myself. You know, big, 6'4", muscle-bound oaf. And, not really. But you're out, and some mugger accosts us, right? We're like in the park somewhere, and this mugger jumps out and says, "Your money or your life?" And I hurl you at him and run away and save myself, okay? And then, somehow you manage to finagle your way free, you're unhurt. We see one another in class the next day. Now, I'm relieved that you're unhurt. I'm happy that you're alive. Just like Peter is happy, Jesus is risen from the grave, everything worked out, that's good. There's still a little bit of awkwardness between us. I'm not going to be assuming we're getting right back together. In fact, I'm pretty much assuming our relationship is officially at an end, unless you inform me otherwise. That, I think, is where Peter's at with Jesus right now. He's thinking, you know what? I'm really glad he's back. That's awesome. It's great that everything he said was true, and I'm sorry that I doubted him and betrayed him. That was really bad, but let's face it. He and I are done. I mean, there's not really much chance he's going to want me to be one of his closest followers after this. And that's why what happens next is so absolutely fascinating. Jesus appears to him. Jesus appears to him, and in the story that we just read at the beginning, he says, "Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me?" There's a lot of deja vu happening in this story. First, he meets him on a beach. Well, that's the first place Peter met Jesus to begin with. That's where he first was just struck by this rabbi who was walking along and said, "Hey, you, follow me. And I will make you fish for people. I will take the thing that you know best in life and totally refashion it and make it into something that is useful to me. Come with me, and I will change your identity." And then, in the moment he thinks he's been totally, not abandoned by Jesus, but he thinks he's abandoned Jesus to the point where maybe Jesus will forgive him, but he's not going to be reinstated or anything. Jesus shows up at the first place that he met him. And he gives him a chance 3 times to undo what he had done. "You deny me 3 times, profess your love for me 3 times. And then he says the magic phrase, "Follow me." Follow me, the exact same way that he called him the first time. Follow me. Become my disciple again. Become one of my closest confidants, a follower, a leader, someone that I place trust in. The way that Jesus had called all of his fellow disciples. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. The grace, the boundless forgiveness of God for those who do not make the huge mistake of Judas. And I'm not referring to suicide, although that is a huge mistake. If you plan to make it, please talk to me. No, what Judas did was more foundational than that. You see, Judas chose to punish himself rather than receive God's forgiveness. And that's a choice a lot of us make on a regular basis. I don't know about you, but have you ever been at this point in your life where you feel like you've blown it so bad with God, whatever that means for you, whether it's something you did relationally to hurt a friend, something more spiritual like a missed series of devotions or, looking at pornography online or, whatever, for you, you've really blown it in the huge category. And to you, that has been such a betrayal of Jesus, such a betrayal of your walk with God, such a disappointment to your Heavenly Father that you start punishing yourself and you won't allow yourself to pray and ask for His forgiveness until you feel like you sort of earned it. You sort of built up a reservoir of, okay, God, I've been good enough that you sort of owe me forgiveness. I mean, I know I really haven't earned it, but at least it's better than just coming to you cold, naked, and hungry. Please, now forgive me. We're doing the same thing that Judas did. You see, there's this funny thing about forgiveness. It can be offered, but it's not actualized until it's received. We have to choose to receive forgiveness. Judas chose not to. Peter chose to. And that, in the final analysis, is the real difference between the two of them. Of Judas, Jesus said, it would be better for him if he had never been born. Because he chose to cut himself off from the grace of God. This is the first Wednesday after Easter, the first week of school, right after Easter. Easter is my favorite holiday. It really is. It is the Super Bowl of Christianity. As a minister man, Easter is where it's at. And the thing I love most about Easter is the promise of new life. The resurrection of Jesus, found contrasted in the stories of Judas and Peter. Judas found death. Peter found new life. A reinstatement of the life he thought he had lost forever. This is spring. Right before my wife left for Louisiana to visit some family, she planted some seeds in her little garden, and she asked me to water them for her and to sort of take care of them while she was gone. It was the most amazing thing. I mean, I did it when I was a kid, but I haven't really done gardening in a long time. So I'm out there, I'm pouring water on dirt, feeling like an idiot, like day after day. And one day I got there, and there's like little green things. And I was like, what the heck? This stuff really works. No wonder we've been eating for thousands of years successfully. Agriculture, a success. And so what began to happen was just the most amazing thing to me, that through dirt and grime, new life had sprung. And that's the promise of spring, and that's a promise of Easter. And so I don't know what's happened in your life the last few weeks over spring break. Maybe you blew it in a way that is small or huge, minor mistake, huge mistake, devastating mistake. I don't know. I know I made several mistakes. The Bible word for those are sins. But what you have tonight is a chance to choose to receive the forgiveness that God offers you. The new life of spring, the resurrection power of Easter can be yours, can be manifested in your life. I don't know about you, but I really, really, really want to hear Jesus say again, follow me. Let me reinstate you. Not just forgive you and, you know, sort of keep you out to the outside, but bring you all the way back in to the place of intimacy, faith, love, trust. That's the promise of Easter. That's the promise of the gospel. That's what it's all about. Join me in prayer.